Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Hello, all you lovely people, and welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight, we're going to take a look at a movie that's not necessarily notable for being on the banned 39 list, although it was, but because the director, writer, star of the movie gave up his career in filmmaking to pursue his law career and was in the 101st floor of the World Trade Center when it blew up. Whoops. So, let's take a look at Charles McCann's 1980 Forest of Fear, a.k.a. The Toxic Zombies, a.k.a. The Blood Eaters. Enjoy the show.
Now, blood eaters are out there. They are coming, hunting, searching out fresh prey. Without feeling, without mercy, they track their victims down. Nothing will prepare you for the horror of these butchers of the damned. Nothing will protect you from the terror of the blood eaters. See, Blood Eaters, rated R.
And welcome back. We just got done seeing Forest of Fear, a.k.a. Toxic Zombies, a.k.a. The Blood Eaters. So you want to tell us a little about it?
A bunch of marijuana distributors, a growing pot up in the mountains, and some feds come in and kill one of their people.
Who is, strangely enough, having this sponge bass in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell? I mean, the only reason she's there is because it's a horror film. We got to get some boobies in there. Mm-hmm. But, so she's got her jubilees on display for all to see.
And they come in and basically shoot her in the throat. And a couple of the other guys show up and kill the feds and bury
those
them.
Those filthy, filthy hippies.
Those damn hippies.
They're not dirty, filthy hippies. They're more like the disillusioned college types who are fuck the man now.
So they the hippies get revenge on the DEA agents by strangling them and killing them. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh shit, our grow operation's been found out and we gotta get out of here. And they start grabbing all the weed they can.
And also bickering with one another because one guy wants to leave right then, another guy wants to know. No one's coming, let's just pick them.
We got $2 million dollars of dope in these hills. Let's go. Meanwhile, back in Washington, you've got John Amplis and his boss, and they're all like, you know, hey, we've got all this weed in the hills. Why don't we go take a look and, you know, see what we can do about it? And it's like, I know what we can do. We've got a whole bunch of this unproven toxic chemical that we can go spray on their fields and kill all their
herbicide.
An herbicide and kill all their weed. Great idea. Let's do that. And so they hire basically Ma and Pa Kettle, who, hands down, the best characters in the movie. Am I right?
Yes, they actually very strongly performed.
They're colorful. They got great lines. Give me that phone, bitch.
And eerily enough, when the husband is lying on his back on bed with his hair back, he looks exactly like John Cazale in Profile. I thought, is that John Cazale?
God,
I had to make
right.
sure.
He does.
I had to make sure, and then when I saw him again, I was like, wait a minute, it still looks like he's not from front, but from the side. It's like, oh my God. And this is like a year before John Cazale's death, too.
So they get the worst crop duster in the world, who sobers up just enough to go and spray the fields with this ridiculously toxic chemical. Of course, the hippies are out there grabbing all the weed they can, and they get sprayed with this stuff. And what's going to happen in a movie called Toxic Zombies when you spray them with toxic chemicals? You get zombies! You know, actually, your observation was right, that this is more of a remake of The Crazies than a zombie flick.
Yeah, it's the Crazies mixed with Night of the Living Dead and what was the other one? There was,
I think Rabid.
Rabid, that's the one I was thinking. But mm-hmm. That most resembles, in my mind, because of the way they're transmitting. They're not was not so much the transmission of the disease, but what the people do when they get infected, where they just go on an eating rampage. They just bite people and suck their blood. And
yeah, exactly.
It's weird.
If anything, they were vampires. Because they don't eat people. They just go after the blood.
And yeah, that's vampires what, that's, without the sunlight.
That's what they, that's yeah. what Rabbit is. It's a weird Cronenberg vampire movie.
So this movie has a very strong George Romero vibe to it, which understandable because it's in they shot this in Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Stuff.
And hell, if you want to tie the vampire George. Thing in with Romero, John Amplis was Martin Romero's vampire film. So there's another.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, it's like, holy shit, is that fucking Martin? Holy fuck! What the fuck is he doing in this bit role? Because he's like got like 5 minutes of screen time. It tops. He shot like 2 days.
Well, yeah, one day in the studio and one day
out in the field,
out in the woods. That was it.
That was one of the big problems with the movie, is it criminally underused this really good talent. Well, mm-hmm. actually, there were, I suppose there's plenty of problems with the movie, but
yeah.
So they spray the chemical on the hippies and the weed, and the hippies freak out and start turning in on each other, and there's like 2 people in the camp that didn't get sprayed, and so they try to eat them. They go and run over to another campsite that's a little down the road, and they've got this father and mother, and they're making beans, and the guy's like completely incompetent. He's like the poor person in those infomercials at 3 a.m. He's like he's trying to do this with the can opener, and his beans are going everywhere. It's like, what the fuck, person? Do you not know how to work a can opener?
Don't you hate when you can't open
his
a can?
Kids, the one God. Son. The son is mentally challenged.
Let's call. I mean, we can use the terminology that the dude used. He called him straight out retarded.
Yeah, he did.
And yeah, it was more common at that time. Still, sort of.
Oh God, there's so much racism in this movie. Well, not.
Well, not. It's ableism or whatever.
Ableism. Well, there's the bit where the guy the hero hero's friend is in the car.
Half brother,
and yeah. He's all like, he's like to the retarded guy. I'm like. Oh, this is really cringeworthy. What the fuck,
dude? Yeah, he was doing a whole bunch of stuff, and they were telling me really, like,
awful Polish jokes. Polish and jokes, Irish jokes.
And Italian and joke, and, you know, it's like, oh my God.
The 70s was a strange place.
Holy crap. You know, the only thing that made this, I think, better is if the pot itself had gone up and gone ambulatory and gone after people.
And that would have been a better movie, I think.
Yeah.
As we were watching this, I had the idea of the... What should have happened was that, so the government sprays all this weed, the hippies get the hell out, they come back in, harvest the weed, and now they go and sell this weed, and people are smoking and freaking the fuck out. So that's how you spread your zombie virus contagion. That would have been an awesome movie.
That would
I want to go write that movie right now.
All right, and I had an alternate idea, is these weed hippies, the weed growers, have killed the 2 feds, who killed one of their own. So there's 3 dead bodies, shallow graves, dust cropping. The dust converts those dead 3 into the zombies.
So it would have been a proper weed of the living dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, the and weed people.
They know, come up, kill the rest of their group, and then infection moves outward from there. But they're never dead in the first place.
Again, it's crazy. More it's more like the crazies than a zombie flick. So then we pick up with our hero, who is this local... Forestry service guy. And he's like, gets this telegram from Washington to say, hey, don't go up into the woods. There's flooding. He's like, there ain't no flooding up there. Fuck it. I want to go take my fishing trip. So he gets his half-brother, Todd, the racist one, and his wife, and they go up into the mountains, and they fish, and they camp, and... They fuck a little bit. Then the zombies show up. No, oh, come on. The way he was groping her, every second of the movie, he was like, oh, baby. Oh, I want... Is the mountains here? Are the mountains here? Whoa, that's X-rated.
Oh, Fujiko.
We'll talk later.
So they go up into the mountains and they start getting, they say, hey, here comes somebody, you know, here comes the retarded guy and his sister, because they just got away from the zombies that attacked their parents. And what happened? Oh no, crazy man. And so they head off. And basically the rest of the movie is them running away from the zombies until they get caught up by the DEA agents, who then say, you know, we got to tie up the loose ends. Let's take you out of the woods and shoot you. And then zombies show up and eat everybody and movie's over pretty much.
And there is there's a guy who grew up in the woods, spent his entire life in the woods. He lives in a cabin and he doesn't want anything to do with that government. Because government, you know, come and spray on my crops and my dog bit me. I had to put my dog down and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And he's like the total, you know, typical kind of backwoods, not necessarily right wing, just anti-government, you know, kook who didn't want anything to do with anybody that's not him, you know. And they talk their way into the house. And then, of course, the remaining, you know, weed people show up with lit torches, you know, which means they must have had
tools and implements.
Well,
and
you know, like
deductive reasoning
matches or a lighter or something.
Well, they were still living human beings.
Right. Yeah, they weren't undead. Crazy. They weren't undead. They're just like the taste of flesh. But I'm sure they could think for themselves, you know, pretty well. And the infection took a while to manifest because they were sitting around for a long time. You know, and Mr. Joe Pilato analog is like, we're going to leave in an hour. He says that about like 10 times. We're going to leave in an hour. Get your shit together. We're going to leave in an hour. God damn it. Oh, and, you know, and they're just sitting there, because I was thinking the whole time watching these people sitting in this in by the tents and stuff, these guys look like junkies. They look like they're on a nod. You know, I mean, they're on some serious shit and they're hurting and they need their next fix. So this whole thing kind of has this whole... There's a get back to nature thing, big time, obviously, because everybody's talking about getting back to nature and anti-government. I live in this forest my whole life. And these people are like, the junkie hippies are coming with their filthy junk in their veins. They're coming and they're going to do shit.
And that's the problem the movie has, is that it wants to have that George Romero, I have social commentary to say, but it is so inept that it can't, in fact, deliver that social commentary. It's like schizophrenic.
The one thing that really gets me is this reminds me a lot of the kind of movies the late, great Don Doler, oh, bless him, used to make. A lot of wide takes, you know, really long takes with a lot of dialogue delivered by people who should never be allowed and, you know, near camera.
Oh, God, the acting. You know. The acting is the finest that the local community theater can offer. Oh, my God. Except for a couple of folks.
Mm-hmm.
And Ma and Pa Kettle, they were the stars of the show.
Give me that phone, you goddamn bitch!
Yeah, beyond that, the acting is so terrible. That's what's frustrating about the movie, is that there's so much missed potential. You've got, like, the makeup is basically what you would get in a Halloween kit at, like, Kmart, and you would just kind of rub it on your face, and, you know, I've got jaundice, I'm now a zombie crazy man. The gore is basically, you know, Karo syrup and, you know, thrown at, like, windows and, like, on the floor, and it just kind of not very comes together.
And the gore effects are basically post-facto. You never actually see anything exit. It's always after the person's been shot, then you see the, you know, the hole in the neck.
You come and see the aftermath, like that one kill.
Yeah, legs, you know, strewn around. It's like, oh.
Which is just a weird choice for a zombie or not zombie flick, where you see the aftermath. Okay, a movie where you don't see the act and you see the aftermath can be amazingly effective.
Yes.
But a zombie movie, you want to see throats being torn out and blood spurting and, you know, all sorts of crazy, crazy death. And if it had dialed that up to 11 and, like, just been over the top with the blood, I think we would have been singing this movie's praises as opposed to kind of...
Yeah, because this is basically, these people are essentially cannibals to a degree. They're kind of rarefied, in a rarefied atmosphere where they don't have anything else to eat.
The movie, as we were watching it, kept reminding me an awful lot like Don't Go Into the Woods Alone. Where basically you have this group of friends who get their hands on a film camera and a whole bunch of film stock and bang out a script and say, hey, let's go make a movie. And they go up into the woods and shoot over like 5 or 6 weekends. But the difference here is that this one doesn't ever quite come together, where Don't Go Into the Woods Alone gives you exactly what you want every 5 minutes. Boom, death, death, death. And That's what's frustrating about this movie.
But there is definitely some technique in this. I mean, there's some good cinematography, you know, for what it's worth.
It's not completely without merit.
And they had a good sound mix too. It wasn't incomprehensible. You know, the stuff synced up really well. I thought for the amount of money they put into it, it might have been an issue. But there are some really good sounds in there that are nice and crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the dialogue, I could hear every single word. I wasn't having trouble making stuff out.
Technically, the guy did a good job making the film.
Mm-hmm.
From the technical aspect, well done. It's just not...
He's not an actor's director. He's a technical director.
And he had an actor's director at his disposal.
Exactly.
And he didn't utilize him.
Well, Charles McCann is, he loves movies. He said, I want to make a movie. So it's not so much a vanity project, but it's a passion project. Mm. He really wanted to do this movie. And so it shows in the Ed Wood level of I love movies, but it also shows in the Ed Wood level of I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
All things considered, the fact that he got this thing, you know, cobbled together finally at least allows him to use this as a calling card to do something, you know, better, but I guess he just dropped the ball.
Yeah.
He wasn't interested in doing it anymore.
He has a horror movie that was banned in England and got an international distribution deal. We don't, therefore he's one up level on us.
And I will say, I did like his character in the movie to a degree. I mean, when you have a lack of you know, authority figures, and the one in there, he's kind of like a little dodgy, but he got in there and he did, you know, he got mixed up with the weed people, you know, and he did a pretty good job cleaning house. You know, unfortunately his wife didn't make it. I liked her.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. You know, sometimes you just lose one or two, but he does have a secretary.
I think it emotionally would have been a stronger scene if one of the two kids died and the wife survived. That would have been a bigger impact.
Yeah. Or if he'd heard her screaming, you know, a bit more and couldn't get to her, you know, and didn't know, and he's trying and trying and trying to get through these woods, but he got to deal with all these zombies. And I think having a few more, considering the length of this movie, I think maybe if he'd upped the ante on the number of undead, I mean, maybe dispatch a few more of them faster, but maybe use some of the people in different roles and make him background undead to be done away with to give it more scope.
Right. You know, the same extra shuffling around.
Doubling up. That would increase the herd and wouldn't have really cost anything but more makeup, you know, money.
And a change of clothes.
Yeah.
And that's where the movie doesn't quite come together. With a little bit more time and a little bit more money and a little bit more in the gore effects, it would have been a stronger flick.
Because I can tell you, I would have been really like weirded out if you see more coming from just the edge of the woods or way back in the background. They just keep coming, and, you know, especially when he's, you know, doing one in, and then you see another one just appear out of nowhere, and that's you know, it's like, turn around, you idiot.
One of the missed opportunities is John Amblis is a guy who had a number of films under his belt.
Exactly.
With George Romero.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked with Tom Savini. He had this wealth of experience. And I'm wondering, at any point, did he say, hey, I could make a phone call?
I got Tom Savini in my Rolodex.
Yeah. And maybe could have come over for a day and said, okay, I won't do it for you, but I'll teach you guys how to do it so that I can get back to what I'm doing. And
exactly.
You guys can hone your craft and get better.
Let me have George look at your script and give you his opinion on it. Get a free script editing out of it. I'm sure George probably would have went, sure. Yeah, and the guy's making it.
He would get
a free script editor out of it.
Yeah.
Heck, might have even been able to get some of the guys that worked on some of George's films, you know, like Night of the Living Dead.
I think they did have a couple of the folks
like
in
Judy
the cast.
Ridley, yeah. Judith Ridley or people like that, you know.
And then actually, the guy, he writes the film, produces the film, directs the film, and acts in the film. Well, stars in the film. It's like, dude. Drop the director, have John Amblis do the directing.
Exactly.
Because the guy had the means. And I'm sure Amblis, being who he is, and knowing what that kind of filmmaking is,
wouldn't have said, well, you got to pay me. He wouldn't have, I don't believe he would have said it.
Or give me a small fee to cover, you know, give me gas tolls and you know, some weed.
Yeah. And there's the gal who played Amy was also a bit of a larger actress. She actually has like 30 films under her belt. So it's like he had people he could have utilized, but there's no way of knowing because there's no commentary in this for the film. There's no interviews that I can find.
So basically, again, this movie adds to the pile of missed opportunities.
Yes.
So does Forest of Fear belong on the Video Nasty list?
Oh, hell no. This is Night Flight level stuff.
It's with boobs. Actually, it's the safe to put on regular primetime television almost.
You want to know the funny thing is? When I was doing research for the movie, I found a copy of the movie on YouTube that had Commander USA bumpers at the beginning and the end. So it ran on Commander USA's Groovy Movies a couple of times. It was harmless. This is a textbook example of why or how broken the process for selecting movies that wound up getting banned and censored was. You take a look at this movie and you say, you know, 12 people sat in a room, watched this movie and said, no, that's got to be banned. And then they looked at The Beyond and they said, nah, that's okay. We can let that one go. So, no. Case dismissed.
Oh, yeah.
So, did you like Forest of Fear?
It wasn't good and it wasn't bad. Kind of, you know, I'm in the middle. I'm on the fence on this one. It's kind of meh. It doesn't suck so bad that for me it was a chore because I'm pretty patient and pretty lenient. But it, like you said, there was missed potential in
it. Right. What was your standing on it?
It's not a bad film, but it is bad for myriad reasons, which we've discussed, but meh.
I'm going to go with I'm on the fence too. I mean, it's not the worst movie that we've seen on the list so far, and it's by no means the best movie. It's just kind of there. The movie is got lots of potential. It just doesn't come together and deliver that potential. It could be good with a little time and a little polish, and it just doesn't come together.
The film it's not a bad film, and then I have to say, but it is a bad film, and what makes it bad is all of the missed opportunities in the production.
Exactly.
And yeah. And the best actors in this movie, the couple that played the hillbillies and John Amplis, who's, you know, quite accomplished.
They totally wasted, you
know,
John Amplis.
How do you waste John Amplis? Now, I know John Amplis. I've met him. I know him on Facebook. And the man is really dynamic. You know, he's a dynamic personality. And I just felt like, oh, my God, why is he sitting there? Why are they not letting him do anything?
They just squandered him in probably 5 minutes of film. And it was probably 2 days of shooting for him. That was it.
Yeah, so. You know, and he might have been involved in another production, you know, or something at the time, and maybe he only had a limited amount of time to be there, but there were just wasted scenes where he and his acting partner in this, they both play feds or something like that.
FBI agents.
And they're doing nothing but sitting on a phone trying to get in touch with these people, and I'm thinking, why not have them say, oh my God, what the hell, and get out on the road sooner. I think the scenes involving them, where they finally got out on the road and got into the middle of this whole mashup, should have been a little earlier in the film, and maybe come across some of these infected people and started racking up bodies, you know, and at least... The number of people infected in this film is insufficient for the amount of time spent sitting watching this film. I think there should have been more infected if you're going to have people running through the forest, because it's just like, okay, five people and they're lurching about for an hour and a half or whatever, however long this is. It needed to be more if it was going to be that kind of movie.
Exactly.
This is the kind of movie you get when you want something with five zombies running around by Monday.
Well,
exactly.
They're not zombies. The
movie is inspired by zombie films, and it should have just been made as a zombie film. Mm-hmm. That's its biggest fault.
Yeah, they're...
I'm going to be inspired by a zombie films and make a zombie film, but they're not going to be zombies.
Well, we figured this is kind of a cross between Night of the Living Dead and The Crazies and maybe Rabbit. Rabbit has the same thing with this infection going around. You know, exactly. People doing
even though Evil things. Dead came out a year later, it took an idea that Evil Dead used, and Evil Dead hit the ground running with it. And this guy didn't even cross the finish line.
And I get the idea that maybe once they were up in the woods, the kind of their lack of experience was forcing them to basically just try and do something safe. Where they said, you know, we got to do this, and we got to do this, but we don't have the, maybe we just don't have the experience to pull off bam, bam, bam.
It was Charles McCann's first movie.
Well, there may have also been a little bit of, I don't have enough film, one take, move on.
Yeah.
And it did feel like at the beginning there was a lot of that. I mean, a lot of long shots where they're just driving and, you know, there's kind of the POV thing in the car, but... You know, Light of Living Dead.
Or that, so the hero of the piece and his girlfriend, his wife, they're like scuffling and like they're tearing their clothes, and there's this weird edit thing. So it's almost like he didn't have enough coverage to edit that scene properly. I'm gonna go with that's okay. Not the worst film on the list, not the best. I'm not gonna ever watch it again.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have seen movies that just made me just. This sucks so bad. This one I was actually engaged enough with to want to know what the hell was going on later. You know, I mean, it drew me in to a point where I was thinking, okay, why don't these people act in a more, you know, straightforward manner when they're being chased by zombies? And this one wife of the husband, they come to do this cookout with their kids, and she's running and she can't speak, she can't say anything, she's completely basically in shock until these people come out of the woods onto this back road, and she's been saved by this guy with a truck. And she's, like, completely useless until this guy stumbles out of the brush. And then she's like, that's it, that's the guy!
And then the weird end of that scene is the guy gets out of the truck. It's like, she's all freaking out. It's like, oh, my God, get away from him. He's the guy that attacked me. He's like, you wait right here. Gets out of the truck, goes over and says, hey, man, you want to ride into town?
What the fuck?
She didn't even say that's the guy who attacked
me. Yeah, no, she did.
She said, that's the guy. Period.
She got all hysterical at him. I mean, it was pretty clear... That's what the attacker was.
My problem with that scene was this: the man with the truck thought she was in a marital spat and thought, "Oh, that's your husband, isn't it?" You know, I'm like, "Oh no, please."
Again, it was just indicative of the really kind of sloppy writing of the movie.
We ask your cooperation in helping keep our theaters clean. Please deposit all containers and litter in trash receptacles located in the theater. Thank you.
And there we go, kiddies. Toxic Zombies back on the shelf. Be sure to check back in next week when we get into the Naughty Nazis. It'll be the Gestapo's last orgy, and I'll assure you that it's going to be hideously terrible. In the meantime, if you could, please drop us a note at thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. And we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye. No.